Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikian.
And good morning. My name is Phil Vacchio.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Dave.
Phil and I are two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here just about every weekend. Specifically us, just about every weekend, Phil, I feel like.
You think it's more often us?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Jane Marie.
Hey, Jane Marie did a great job.
I know one person who's always week, here, right? Actually. Last John week. Gabriel, you're always here.
Almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
Well, the three of us are here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and elder law, trusts and wills and powers of attorney and leap years today, apparently.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. It's a call-in show, and you can reach us at 518-476-5900 if you want an appointment with Phil or Jay Marie or myself in one of our three offices in Albany, Saratoga Springs, or Kingston. You can reach us at 518-465-7581 or email us. Email at info, info,
you know, that
at herzoglaw.com.
The leap year thing brings up a good question legally.
Yeah.
Okay, if someone was born on February 29th.
They turned 11 yesterday.
Yeah.
How
do you guys deal with that? What do you do?
Still exists as a day.
I mean, is it March 1st or is it February 28th?
So let's get into this because I did a little deep dive on leap years and leap days.
Oh, okay.
Origin story.
So many days are in a year?
Well, 365, more or less.
And a quarter.
Tell me about the more or less, guys, or the quarter. So it's not actually a quarter. It's 365.
It's like 5 hours.
0.242 and then some more numbers.
Yeah.
Days long. Which means that every 4 years, we have a full day, right? Essentially a quarter every year is off.
Right. Builds up over time.
So we make it up. But because it's not exactly a quarter, I didn't know this, not every 4 years is a leap year.
Really?
Out of every 400 years or 100 leap years, there are 3 years that are not leap years to make up for that other part of the decimal point.
Now, but will that happen in our lifetime? Did you go that?
It will not happen in our lifetime.
I did not know that.
The years 1700, 1800, and 1900, so even 100 years, are should have been leap years, right? They're divisible by 4, but they are not leap years, but the year 2000 was. So, for example, it's 2024, right? The year 2100 will not be a leap year.
Ah.
Okay.
The year 2200 will not. The year 2300 will not, but the year 2400 will.
And that makes up for those hundredths of the decimal, I guess.
Yes, but not entirely. So in addition to that, every 8,000 years and every 20,000 years, there's a little snafu on the whole leap year thing. So we won't see it. We won't even see 2100, Phil.
Yeah, no.
I got to make it to a buck 20.
Yeah.
You got to make it to what? Buck 13, buck 14.
Yeah, is that right? That's a pretty high goal there.
Yeah,
you want to make it that long?
I don't. Not at all.
Well, I have a funny leap year story. I had a client signing on February 29th.
Yeah.
A gentleman from England, actually. Well, not in the U.S., but from England. And he asked me, can I legally sign these documents today? And I was like, well, why not? He's a computer programmer. Well, it's a leap year, so this day doesn't always exist. I was like, well, it exists this year, and we could look back on it and see that it was a calendar. And
not, computer, not in Microsoft Excel, it doesn't.
Well, he works for some state agency, and they're like, well, it's not an option, so we can't do certain tasks today. We have to do them tomorrow because it's not an option on our drop-down.
That's crazy.
The date doesn't exist.
And I was this day and age?
No, yeah.
What's that?
With the technology we have this day and age, and he has to do that.
Well, you would think it's not that big of a deal.
There's a whole story to that thing, too, but we can't get to it yet because we do have a caller, right, John?
Wonderful. Yeah, we have a caller. This is Jenna, who has a quick call, and then she's going to hang up, so go right ahead.
Good morning, Jenna. What's up?
Good morning. I'm wondering about when you think you have all the assets in a trust and then you stumble upon another asset, how long does that new asset have to stay in the trust before it's protected?
That's a great question.
Okay.
You don't want to stay on? You just want to hang up? That's it?
I'll stay.
All right. Yeah, hang out with us. Hang on. What else are you going to do? It's Saturday morning. It's raining outside.
Yeah.
So You're talking about the 5 years of protection, and Phil, an asset needs to be in the trust for 5 years if the protection we're talking about is nursing home protection.
Nursing home only.
And if it's home care we're talking about, Jenna, then it's 1 month later. But you're saying, all right, things have, you've had a trust for 10 years. Things have been in there for most of those years. Those things are protected. Whatever they turn into is protected. You find a CD. You find a savings bond, some stock, Phil. You decide, you know what, we got to add it to the trust.
Sure, which happens.
What's going to happen?
So we can certainly add that account to the trust. Now, that particular asset, Jenna, will have its own five-year look back. So it won't necessarily affect the look back of the other assets that have been in the trust.
Yeah, most importantly, it does not impact any of the other protections, but that asset, 5 years.
Yeah, it'll have its own 5-year look back. So in the event that something does happen within that 5 years, we may have to take certain steps to get that particular asset out of the trust because it's not protected yet. We wouldn't want to void the whole trust and lose the protection of the other assets. But we can do that, just understanding that that asset itself has its own 5-year look back. And remember, that's, again, for only for nursing home care purposes. That applies.
It's like an inventory system, Jenna. And so let's say, let's keep going with this fact pattern. You know, you add something in 2024. Well, you know what, 2 years from now, son of a gun, you want to pull some money out of the trust for whatever reason. It's going to be that money that we pull out first because that is not protected yet.
Of course.
Does that make sense, Jenna?
Yes, thank you.
Huh.
Wonderful.
What else you got for us, Jenna? Anything else?
That was it today.
That was it, really. So, thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. It's nice.
Great. Bye-bye now.
Phil, do you know anyone that was born on a leap day?
No, my brother was born February 27th, so very, very close.
Ooh, there was someone in school, throughout school, you know, elementary or whatever, named Eric Blumenfeld. Happy 11th birthday, Eric Blumenfeld. That's how old he turned.
Yeah.
2 days ago. There you go.
So he doesn't get a birthday party in school except every 4 years.
Well, or you pick one day
before or after, I guess.
I know.
It's nice to have an extra day. I mean, I couldn't wait for March, so I was like, you know, I wish it was just 28 days in February. I'm ready for spring.
Yeah. We got a little taste last week, right? That was that one warm day. It's supposed to be warm Sunday, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow, Monday, maybe around 60. We're looking at that right now. So
I'm afraid to make the call to, like, emotionally for me to say the winter is over. I always look at the lows, Phil.
You can't say that.
I'm not a highs guy, I'm a lows guy.
Yeah.
And if the lows are above 32, then I feel pretty good.
Okay. Well, I have to get out there and trim my fruit trees. It's very important. Timing is crucial.
Yeah.
For my pear trees.
You have a pear tree?
What kind of pears?
Yeah. I inherited
a pear tree?
Two pear trees and three cherry trees.
Yeah, we've done this whole time.
Inherited from the previous owner.
Yep. Pear trees grow really, really well up here. I had one at one house I lived at. Yeah.
The pear trees are great. We get a lot. Yeah. Guess how many cherries we get?
How many?
Zero. I haven't eaten one cherry from three trees because the birds get to them as soon as they start.
I have good news for you, Phil.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stores that have lots of cherries.
But not cherries like these.
Whatever you need them.
Not cherries like these.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, you got to grow your own.
It tastes better when you grow your own. I don't know.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But we do have a semi-topic here, and we both organically came to kind of the same topic, which was
organically.
Yeah, which was like through our meetings and stuff, John.
Oh,
you know,
okay,
so I was like, hey, I got to bring this up.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it was the difference between probate and avoiding probate.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
there were a couple fact patterns where, man, it really hammered home how awful the probate thing could be.
Yeah.
Yep.
And one of those fact patterns involves where mom is one of the beneficiaries, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
of a plan. She wasn't actually the beneficiary, but by law she would be. There was no will,
mm-hmm.
and she is incapacitated. Mm-hmm. So we need to go through the guardianship and this and that, whatever.
Yeah.
And the other one, and we'll kind of delve into this, I know, Phil, you have as well, was kind of, you know, someone was like, well, what's probate? And I was in the Kingston office.
Right.
And I said, well, if you were going to Albany right now, you could take Route 9 from Kingston. You'll get to Albany. I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take you a little while.
Yeah.
Or you could take the thruway.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's kind of what probate is. Probate is going Route 9. It's going to take some more time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say taking Route 9 costs more money in my little analogy here, but probate does cost more money.
Yes.
Almost every single time than planning ahead of time. But the most important thing to me is not the money, Phil. It's always the delay.
Yeah, that's huge. That's a good example. They're both likely, going to get you to the same place.
You get to the same place. Exactly right. So the will is likely not to be successfully contested.
Right.
The will is going to have the same provisions as same as a trust as to who gets your money and so on. But you're getting the same place a lot slower.
Yeah, a lot of traffic jams, a lot of things
red lights,
accounted for.
A lot of red lights.
Red lights, stop signs, all that kind of stuff. My example really quickly was somewhat even more organically. It wasn't even related to my time in the office. I happened to be outside taking the kids to school Thursday morning, and one of my neighbors came up to me. That really windy day, I had recycling all over the street.
I think every day has been a really windy day.
But Thursday particularly. Yeah.
Yesterday was
a
really windy night.
So I was out there cleaning up some stuff, and my neighbor, gentleman probably in his late 70s, early 80s, really great guy, came up to me and he's like, "Oh, I meant to tell you, my brother passed away recently." I was like, "Well, I'm very sorry to hear that." He's like, "Yeah, and you know, I'm the power of attorney, executor, all the above." And he's like, "Phil, you gotta tell everybody. You gotta tell everybody how terrible probate is." I was like, "Well, I do,
and you do
every day and most Saturdays.
Oh, yeah,
I do preach that word, but I can't get to everybody." And he's like, "Yeah, you know, it's just awful. I'm trying to grieve, and all these things are coming up, and I have to take care of it." And I have a good buddy who's an attorney that's handling it, but it's still a whole mess. And I was like, we see this all the time. And he's right. You know, a lot of times you're also trying to grieve in the midst of all of a sudden you have all this responsibility thrust upon you.
Yeah, it's a lot to take.
No idea what you're doing most of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully you do find a good attorney to guide you through.
Sometimes the attorney doesn't know what they're doing.
Sometimes that happens as well. So yeah, I mean, that's people don't realize they hear the term probate, they don't know A, what it is, B, how it works, when it's necessary, and there's a lot of misconceptions around it, and it's pretty easily avoidable if you take the proper steps.
There was a publication, like, you know, one of those monthly magazines. I don't recall the name of it, but I remember reading. It's like more business centric up here, Saratoga, whatever. And there was an article written by a financial advisor, and it was about why you have to have a will. And a lot of times financial advisors, like if you go to their websites, the kinds of things they do is obviously, you know, investing and managing money.
Sure.
But a lot of times one of the bullet points they put, Phil, is estate planning.
Of course.
And they're not the nitty gritty estate planning. They're like you need a beneficiary on your life insurance, or you need, you know, are you going to name your kids as a beneficiary on your IRA or something like that?
Which is very important.
Yeah, but that's kind of like the extent of it.
Yeah, it's a piece of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess on the same side of the other side of the same coin, we help people when they say, "Hey, Jenna's calling. Should I put this extra thing in the trust or not?"
Right.
Or when I put money in the trust, could I invest it? Or what should I do with it? And it's always like, well, what are your plans? And you may want it to be liquid. You may not. So we like delve into money management just a touch.
Right.
But we are not to give advice on financial matters.
Absolutely not.
And I'm going to say that financial advisors should not give advice on estate planning. Especially not to say you got to have a will, because that's not the end all. That's not the whole sentence.
Yeah, right. It's not an incorrect statement.
You do
need a will, but what I always say, a will is necessary and not always sufficient. And they don't always get to that next step. You need a will and boop, end of story. But
you're right.
It's a safety net.
That's everybody says that. It's the first thing you hear is like,
you need a will.
You got to get a will.
You got to have a will. You don't have a will.
Before anything.
Oh my God. You got to have a will.
Yeah. So.
And you should have a will. Everyone should have a will.
But there's more.
There is a lot more.
Yep.
So we're creeping towards the halfway point here, Phil, but we need to explore this whole probate thing a little more. And kind of get into why
it
could be so bad.
Yeah.
So we'll start with this just statement, right? Phil, you have a will. That will is completely meaningless right now. John, do you know why Phil's will is completely meaningless right now?
No, why?
Because we're talking to Phil. He's right here.
Okay.
Would you like me to tell you, John?
All right.
Yeah. His will doesn't matter until there's no more Phil.
That's correct. Doesn't matter until there's no more Phil.
And now I feel dumb.
And in my situation, it hopefully doesn't matter because I have a spouse who's either joint owner or beneficiary and everything.
Okay.
And that's the plan, but.
Right, but you have a will, and the will, even if your will said you give everything to St. Jude's Children's Hospital, you give everything to John Gabriel and me, or whatever you choose to do with your money. It's, you know, whatever. It's whatever. If you want to give money to John and I, by the way, that is your business.
I'll think about it.
No one can tell you otherwise. You're your own man. But because you're still here, the will doesn't have any legal effect yet. It's supposed to take effect after you pass, and it goes through probate, which is the quote-unquote proving of the will.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get deep into what proving of the will means when we're back in the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kubikin.
My name is Phil Vacchio.
Phil and I are two of the attorneys from Herzog Law Firm, and in the first half of the show, we were talking to you about leap days and years. The year 2100 will not, write it in your calendars right now, it will not be a leap year.
I learned something
new
today.
First, because a year is not 365.25 days, it's a fraction, whatever. But more importantly, we had a caller, Jenna, who had a very good question about what do you do when you need to add things to a trust, and then we started getting into this whole why you got to avoid probate thing. If it sounds like you've heard it before, Phil, it's because you've heard it before.
I have?
Well, we all have.
Every day.
We've been preaching it, yeah. So, in order for Phil's will, sorry, Phil, for picking on you and your estate here. So, Phil's got a will. Phil's will, we all agree, is meaningless because Phil is still here. Say hi, Phil.
Hello. I'm here.
So, Phil's will sits there.
It sits there, but one day Phil's not here. Mm. And when that happens, his will may still not matter, and that's important because Phil mentioned that the plan is everything goes to his wife, and depending on how Phil owns things, I know if I died right now, everything, snap of a finger, goes to my wife, Isabel, because that's how we own things, Phil. That's one way where a will actually doesn't mean what you think it means.
Right, but you used the word earlier that I use often, two words, safety net, because all of your known assets are set up that way. Right? But could there be unknown assets? And I always use the one example because we've dealt with this plenty of times. You pass away in some kind of tragic incident, car crash or something of that nature. There's a lawsuit pending.
Yeah. Well, Phil's 23 years old. You think a 23-year-old just dies like that?
That's right. Yeah.
24.
Unexpected. Yeah.
Legit though, right? So
it happens.
Especially for young families, right? We know we plan for lots of young families. It should be easy. Everything to each other, to spouse, and then to the kids,
right?
With rules.
Yeah.
But chances are, you know, we're both not dying. And chances are, even if one of us dies, you own joint assets with your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
You're both on the bank account. You're both on the deed.
Yeah.
On the first beneficiary on your retirement is your spouse. You know, the beneficiary on your life insurance is your spouse. So chances are the will won't matter. We will not have to go through probate when the first death happens. And a lot of times, I'm sure you get this pushback, when we're talking about probate and someone hasn't really learned the distinction between wills and trusts and what probate is, they say, well, when my dad died, we didn't have to go through court.
Yeah.
And you're right. You didn't have to go through court. But it's because of how your mom and dad owned their assets.
Yeah. Oftentimes, when the first spouse dies, there's not much of anything to do unless there's one of those unaccounted for assets, like a wrongful death or something like that. It's when the second spouse dies sometimes, particularly if there are young kids and, you know, we don't get into the more in-depth planning, that the will could come into play. And that's when we'd have to go through probate or the unaccounted for assets. And a lot of people don't realize that the will is not automatically enforceable. I mean, I have that conversation almost every day with at least one of my clients. I have a will and it says where I go. Do you think it's going to happen automatically when you pass away?
Yeah. Oh, I like it when they have their funeral arrangements and their final wishes in their will. Mm-hmm. And legally, yeah. those words don't matter until it's been a long time since they passed.
And, mm-hmm. and it's already it's already been done. Oops. Didn't see that.
Yeah.
Well, if it's already been paid for, I'm talking about the funeral thing.
Yeah.
You know, then you're
okay. Well, you could prearrange and prepay. That,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
A
that's a pretty handy thing to do, by the way.
That helps the family taking care of one more thing.
So hold on here, Phil. If you're saying that upon your death, your will that you paid good money for may not even matter because everything just, boom, went to your spouse, well, then why do you need a will, right? Well, mm-hmm. you have backups to your spouse. You have kids and money and trust for the kids. And you might get hit by a bus. We all know up here, Phil, I think it was before you got up here, there was a very tragic limo accident.
Yeah, I read that about took place the case
a couple counties over, and that was a bunch of young parents, and you know, the worst case scenario obviously happened, lawsuits and so on and so forth. And I say to people all the time, my worst case scenario is not my wife and I both dying. That's obviously pretty awful. It would be that plus my kids getting money way too soon and having awful lives, right? Yeah. So if you have a good estate plan, whether it's, you know, to whoever you're leaving money to, but particularly these kids, things like life insurance,
mm-hmm.
your backup life insurance beneficiary, Phil, should not be your kids. It should be the estate of Phil.
Not when
or
they're
the
young.
Trust of Phil.
Not when they're young. Yeah, you can see plenty of examples out there of individuals ruining their lives at a young age because they have too much money and they haven't had the life experience to be mature enough yet. And you would hate for that to happen if something happened to you and your spouse and you have these young kids. So you're right. When you have young kids, one option is to make sure that those kids are not your backup beneficiaries. It's your estate, which would make your will control. And in the will, we can put provisions about how old those kids have to be to take control, who manages it until they reach those ages. But there's another option as
are you
well.
Say trust?
I might. Yeah. I was thinking, is that what you're thinking?
Well, before we do the trust, Phil, can we just talk about what the wrong options are?
Yeah.
Your parents, who you think are going to take care of your kids, are not the right beneficiary for your life insurance. Your brother, who's going to be the guardian you named in your will, is not the right person because then it is their money.
Well, I had the parent conversation the other day, too, because it was a young couple with young kids. And, well, I have my mom is my beneficiary, and I trust that she's going to use it. There's no doubt in my mind she'll use it for my kids. Well, how old is your mom? Oh, she's 71. I'm sorry. You don't want to give an older individual more assets, even if I'm sure mom would do what you want to do with those, but what if mom gets sick and now they're
her make
assets?
Her in charge of the money, Phil. Medicaid is not going to say, oh, no, this was the money you inherited from your son and yada, yada, yada. They're going to say, this is your money, mom.
Right. Not a beneficiary, but the person in charge is a big differentiation there.
Yeah, and look, if God forbid something, mom passed one day, well, then she's got a will. These are one of her assets. You want mom in charge of the money? You want your brother in charge of the money? I love it.
Yep.
Let's make them the trustee of the trust that was inside your will, or better yet, like Phil's saying, what, a standalone trust that says the whole story.
Yeah, a living trust. I mean, so what you're referring to first is the testamentary trust, so we can control distribution of assets through a will. It still has to go through probate, but the benefit is we can set those ages, those parameters, those people in charge, which is great. That's better than nothing, but even better, a living will that we create, right? So it's a legal entity while we're alive, and we can fund it while we're alive.
Yeah.
So it controls immediately.
And you know, it could do what Jen is talking about. So, you know, when we talk about kids, the concern about my kids would not end when they turn 18. When they are technically adults, I want trust language until they're 30, maybe even 35,
mm-hmm.
personally. You know, I don't know when you were at the right age to have gotten a lot of money. I don't know if you know or you can know that in life. But I can tell you, Phil, I was an attorney at 25 years old, and I was in the city. I had a good job and whatever, whatever. But at 30...
Yeah.
That's when I would be at the ultimate, like, now I know what to do with my money.
Well, you also don't want to de-incentivize your children?
I think it is. If we were playing Scrabble, I would not challenge it.
Good. It's a probably big scoring word, too. So you don't want to de-incentivize your children from earning their own money, right? And if you're 25 years old and, yeah, hopefully you have a good head on your shoulders, you're starting a career, but if all of a sudden you have $1 million and you're like, well, I don't have to try so hard.
Maybe I shouldn't go to college.
Yeah, maybe I should skip that and just, you know, travel a little more for the next 5 years. Or
maybe be a lot of my friends' best friends all of a sudden.
Got a lot more friends that way. But yeah, no, I have, you know, my documents are set up the same way. We have, I think, 25, 30, 35. And the point is that the money's still available for use for education, support, maintenance, but we're trusting someone else to make those decisions about what the right use of the money is until we feel the person is fully mature. And I love the idea of multiple ages because hopefully if you make mistakes, you learn from them, and yeah, there's still a pot of money protected, and like, I'm not going to make that same mistake again when I get my next round of inheritance, if you will. So there's ways we can do that. But the living trust is great because it also avoids what we were talking about earlier, probate.
Yeah,
it's the best of both worlds. So you have those young kids. We just said we don't want to name them as backup beneficiaries because then they're going to get control at age 18. I wouldn't necessarily get to choose who controls it until they're age 18, potentially.
Yeah.
But with the living will, I can actually make, I'm sorry, the living trust,
yeah,
I can make a trust a beneficiary, or I can make a trust an owner of an account.
Yeah.
And it'll control that account while avoiding probate at the same time.
A couple weeks ago, Jay Marie and I were talking about the idea of a living trust in the realm of special needs being the standalone thing that a lot of relatives can, you know, say, leave 10% to Timmy's special needs trust and stuff like that. That's huge. When the families are young and we're talking about wills and, you know, all this awful stuff in guardians, I tend to tell them just, you know, do the basics. Start with the basics.
Yeah.
Have that safety net. We all, you know, stuff happens. You know, we can't control that. But we also can recognize that it's likely extremely rare that both young mom and dad are leaving us with minor kids. It's possible, so you have good rules,
yeah,
in your will, and maybe you don't spend more money on the trust, unless you have, you know, I've actually had a bunch of, I'll call them kids because they're a lot younger than me, but they have multiple homes or homes in multiple states.
People are doing well. I was going to point that out.
It can get very complicated.
If it's more complex in nature because of the assets, then yeah, even though you're young, that trust at that young age may still make sense. If I'm operating a business, if I have my own business, and I don't want there to be a business interruption because of the probate, you know, the trust can make sure someone can take over right away. So there are some cases, but yeah, for a lot of really young couples, the basics are going to be okay because it's very rare that something like that would happen. But there are some cases where it's still important.
We have like, how do we have 3 minutes left? What's going on here?
No, you have like,
is this because of the leap year?
Yeah, about a minute.
All of a sudden we only have 3 minutes left?
Yeah.
Oh man, I thought for sure we had 4 minutes left.
A minute and a half.
Well, we'll have to continue the deep dive on probate next week, Bill. But a couple points on it. So the actual proving of a will, like what that means, is your will is a piece of paper. And unlike a trust, which is a legal entity that Phil created the day you signed it, that owns property, it's a property owner, right? The day Phil has you sign that deed. A will has to go through court because the court wants to make sure that you knew what you were doing. You had the ability to know what you were doing. There were witnesses to your will. You know, John Gabriel wasn't holding a gun to your head when you left everything to John Gabriel, as an example, John.
Okay.
Don't get any ideas, John.
Seriously, John.
Right.
So that kind of stuff. And you're going to say, well, what are you talking about? This was just dad's leaving everything to mom. What's the big deal? The big deal is that the state of New York does not just know that.
Right. They don't know. They don't know if it's a 95-year-old with severe Alzheimer's that all of a sudden signed a new will, right? That's a little suspicious in some cases.
Sure.
And if a kid was cut out, that child should have the right to contest and try to prove one of those things that you spoke about.
Every estate in surrogates court is like the court case of the century. That's how they treat it. And there's a good part to that, right? There's no will that goes, you know, that does not have that level of scrutiny,
right,
which is great. Every will that gets admitted for probate deserved to be, and yada, yada, yada. The problem with probate, I always say, Phil, is that even when it's easy, even when it's basic, it's a pain in the butt.
And long.
And long. Yeah. Unlike this show, apparently.
Very short. Today was particularly short. Anyway.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.